is Lord Kapiladeva speaking to Devahuti just after the really long chapter, previous chapter on Sankhya philosophy. This one is called, this chapter is called Understanding Material Nature, so it's not done yet. I think I'll just do the word for word. Yadrichaya.
Yadrichaya.
Without difficulty.
Without difficulty.
Upalabdhena.
Upalabdhena.
With what is obtained.
With what is obtained.
Santushtaha.
Santushtaha.
Satisfied.
Satisfied.
Mita.
Mita.
Little.
Little.
Bhuk.
Bhuk.
Eating.
Eating.
Munihi.
Munihi.
Thoughtful.
Thoughtful.
Vivikta Sharanaha.
Vivikta Sharanaha.
Living in a secluded place.
Living in a secluded place.
Shantaha.
Shantaha.
Peaceful.
Peaceful.
Maitraha.
Maitraha.
Friendly.
Friendly.
Karunaha.
Karunaha.
Compassionate.
Compassionate.
Atmavan.
Atmavan.
Self-possessed.
Self-possessed.
Or self-realized.
Self-realized.
Translation. For his income, a devotee should be satisfied with what he earns without great difficulty. He should not eat more than what is necessary. He should live in a secluded place and always be thoughtful, peaceful, friendly, compassionate, and self-realized. That's all. Purport. Vaishnava Prabhupada. Everyone who has accepted a material body must maintain the necessities of the body by acting or earning some livelihood. A devotee should only work for such income as is absolutely necessary. He should be satisfied always with such income and should not endeavor to earn more and more simply to accumulate the unnecessary. A person in the conditioned state who has no money is always found working very hard to earn some with the object of lording it over the material nature. Kapiladeva instructs that we should not endeavor hard for things which may come automatically without extraneous labor. The exact word used in this connection, yadrichchaya, means that every living entity has a predestined happiness and distress in its present body, semicolon. This is called the law of karma. It is not possible that simply by endeavors to accumulate more money, a person will be able to do so. Otherwise, almost everyone would be on the same level of wealth. In reality, everyone is earning and acquiring according to his predestined karma. According to the Bhagavatam conclusion, we are sometimes faced with dangerous or miserable conditions without endeavoring for them. And similarly, we may have prosperous conditions without endeavoring for them. We are advised to let these things come as predestined. We should engage our valuable time in prosecuting Krishna consciousness. In other words, one should be satisfied by his natural condition. If, by predestination, one is put into a certain condition of life which is not very prosperous in comparison to another's position, one should not be disturbed. You should simply try to utilize his valuable time to advance in Krishna consciousness. Advancement in Krishna consciousness does not depend on any materially prosperous or distressed condition. It is free from the conditions imposed by material life. A very poor man connected to Krishna consciousness as effectively as a very rich man. One should therefore be very satisfied with his position as offered by the Lord. That was the first paragraph. Another word used here is mitta bhuk. Mitta means little. This means that one should eat only as much as necessary to maintain the body and soul together. One should not be gluttonous to satisfy the tongue. Grains, fruits, milk, and similar foods are allotted for human consumption. One should not be excessively eager to satisfy the tongue and eat that which is not meant for humanity. Particularly, a devotee should eat only prasad, or food which is offered to the personality of Godhead. His position is to accept the remnants of those foodstuffs, innocent foods, like grains, vegetables, fruits, flowers, milk, preparations, are offered to the Lord, and therefore there is no scope for offering foods which are in the mode of passion and ignorance. A devotee should not be greedy. This is also recommended. It is also recommended that the devotee should be muni, M-U-N-I, in the verse, thoughtful, semicolon. He should always think of Krishna and how to render better service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That should be his only anxiety. As a materialist is always thoughtful about improving his material condition, a devotee's thoughts should always be engaged in improving his condition in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, he should be a muni. New paragraph. The next item recommended is that the devotee should live in a secluded place. Generally, a common man is interested in pounds, shillings, and pence, or materialistic advancement in life, which is unnecessary for a devotee. A devotee should select a place of residence where everyone is interested in devotional service. Good luck. Generally, therefore, a devotee goes to a sacred place of pilgrimage where devotees live. It is recommended that he live in a place where there is no large number of ordinary men. It's very important to live in a secluded place. Vivikta Shavana. The next item is Shanta, or peacefulness. The devotee should not be agitated. He should be satisfied with his natural income. Eat only as much as he needs to live, to keep, eat only as much as he needs to keep his health. Live in a secluded place and always remain peaceful. Peace of mind is necessary for prosecuting Krishna consciousness. Last paragraph. The next item is Maitra, friendliness. A devotee should be friendly to everyone, but his intimate friendship should be with devotees only. With others, he should be official. He may say, "Yes, sir, what you say is all right," but he is not intimate with them. A devotee should, however, have compassion for persons who are innocent, who are neither atheistic nor very much advanced in spiritual realization. A devotee should be compassionate towards them and instruct them as far as possible in making advancement in Krishna consciousness. A devotee should always remain atmavan, or situated in his spiritual position. He should not forget that his main concern is to make advancement in spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness, and he should not ignorantly identify himself with the body or the mind. Atma means the body or the mind, but here the word atmavan especially means one should be self-possessed. He should always remain in the pure consciousness that he is spirit soul and not the material body or the mind that will make him progress confidently in Krishna consciousness. Well, just a little background, like leading up to this. At least it's an appreciation I have. The connection between these two things, that the process for achieving spiritual perfection in the age of Satyayuga is meditation. So Kapila Dev is, along with being a Shakti Rishi avatar, he's a Yuga avatar, one of the Yuga avatars, who teaches the process of meditation in Satyayuga. So, meditation on what? Well, meditation on devotional service to the personality of Godhead. That's the Sahabhavan. And in order to meditate on devotional service to the personality of Godhead, one needs to have a spiritual conception of who one is and who God is. Not a material conception of who one is and who God is. Or a cloudy conception of both. And therefore, that's the function, one of the principal functions of Samkhya, is to clearly identify the self in the category of spirit, not in the category of matter. There's other things, but that detachment through knowledge in Vedic teachings, Vedic wisdom, these two go together, like all the time. Jnana Vairagya. Lord Chaitanya's teachings include Yukta Vairagya. Rupa Goswami has given us that understanding. Engagement in devotional service gives detachment. This is in Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's own words. When describing Lord Chaitanya, he identified this is Lord Chaitanya's position. His gift is knowledge and detachment. Kapiladeva also, but the knowledge leads to devotional service, and devotional service leads to detachment. So not knowledge just for knowledge's sake, or knowledge, in other words, in some impersonal sense. Can you do this? You just put this on hold for a moment. You have to go use the restroom and I'll come right back. I can't remember the full verse. Vairagya vidyan is bhakti yoga shikshartan ekam purushat parana. And the third one I can't remember. The last is Sri Krishna Chaitanya Sharyuta Tali. This is from Chaitanya Charitamrita. After Sarvabhauma became a devotee, his devotion expanded really fast, and his capacity as a scholar was engaged in service of Lord Chaitanya, and he composed this nice verse along with 99 other verses, 100 verses in glorification of Lord Chaitanya, and this one has stuck for all that period of time. So the knowledge of Samkhya philosophy, the knowledge of categories of matter and categories of spirit, lead to detachment, and in that condition of detachment, the capacity of the mind to properly focus or meditate upon the absolute truth. So impersonalists stop with that. Absolute truth means Brahman. But by good fortune, if one gets the association of a devotee of the Lord, the meditation upon the absolute truth as Bhagavan arises and accelerates because of the all-attractive qualities of Bhagavan. And that brings about or awakens devotional service. So that's what he's describing to Devahuti now. It's just, it's in part of the discussion flow from analysis of matter and spirit. And now it's over here in devotional service. So he's describing to her the natural qualities that are exhibited by the medium of devotional service. It also describes standards by which a practicing sadhaka should consider that, you know, this is the way of life that I should aspire for. In the purport, Prabhupada spends, well, the largest paragraph deals with proprietorship, and that's connected with an earlier, two other verses previously, where transcendental consciousness and material consciousness are, is, you know, compare and contrast, are evaluated. And in material consciousness, proprietor, for the purpose of enjoyment. That's what proprietorship is for. And some people, in a very amazing way, Prabhupada describes, and it's, I've had some people describe like this of their family situation. Some member of the family is so much interested in accumulation of wealth, they really don't use it. They just like to look at it. They count it and look at it again and put it away and pull it out and look at it again. And then think how they can get some more. And they're miserly, even within the family. They're amazed. Other family members are amazed at that disposition. So, you know, the happiness of having it, more commonly is the happiness of, you know, displaying it or having things and trying to find enjoyment through things. So whatever it is, that's the proprietorship outcome that comes from forgetting that Krishna is the proprietor. So in Samkhya, the knowledge and detachment factor goes very strongly. Detachment side, to don't think of oneself as the proprietor. Well, if you're not the proprietor, who is? Well, that which is the source of everything is the proprietor of everything. So knowledge of the absolute truth is needed, and then detachment from the conception of proprietorship. Now comes the practical way of living. Okay, if I'm taught, in principle, to not think of myself as proprietor, what about necessities? So that's being addressed. Yadrichchaya upalabdhena santushtaha. So the Sanskrit word yadrichchaya is a nice word. Here it's without difficulty. Just for reference sake, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur refers to this phrase yadrichchaya of how the living entity falls. You know that one, the fall of the jiva. So how do we get in this circumstance? Because we're in the spiritual world, then why do we come here? Because all that stuff. And he refers to this word yadrichchaya somehow or other. inexplicably. Yadrishaya. We say misuse of free will. Why would we misuse free will? Because it's so nice in the spiritual world. Yadrishaya. Here, the word is used similar, but you know, it's different. The application here is now if one is in the material world, then here comes some prosperity, or here comes some shortage, or whatever it is, whatever the feature of duality is. So that which comes without difficulty. So not over-endeavoring, that's another way of saying the same thing. A devotee should not over-endeavor for something. We make some endeavor. It's one of the factors of action. We're not lazy. But we don't over-endeavor. But where's the line between being not lazy and over-endeavoring? Yadrishaya, that which comes without difficulty. You make some endeavor. We're conscientious. We see there's necessities. Then there's this other phrase in Rupa Goswami's teachings on the same topic, on the topic of renunciation. Anasakta shivishayan yatarham upayunjitaha. Without attachment to vishaya, sense gratification, yatarham, according to suitability. That's like a really flexible word. According to suitability. What is suitable for me may not be suitable for another person, and for that other person may not be suitable for a third person. And even any one of us, what is suitable may fluctuate from time to time. Ideally, suitability is on the path of nivritti. As we spiritually progress, that which we feel is required, necessity on the material side, will diminish somewhat. Well, depends on the circumstance. Like, you know, you have children, you gotta have children paraphernalia. So that's yatarham, that's according to necessity. According to suitability, that which is necessary may fluctuate due to circumstances from time to time. According to suitability, upayunjitaha is being engaged. We accept things and engage things according to suitability. And then, so this necessity according to suitability. It requires good discrimination, some intelligence, leaning towards nivritti. Not more than necessary, but what's necessary you accept according to circumstance and your own individual needs. We discussed this a little bit yesterday at the home gathering. So. Emphasis, major emphasis on not over-endeavoring in this purport. Another is honest labor, as far as the Vaishnava principle. Should I or shouldn't I? And if it's like, if there's an ethical consideration about dishonesty, should I? The devotee goes to the side of honest labor, because there are ways that one can increase one's wealth, that's or sense of ownership of things, so that I can have whatever I want or something like that. Honest labor, not some other kind, and be satisfied. That's that yadrishaya, without difficulty, upalabdhena. With what is obtained, santushtaha, satisfied. So we're a spirit soul within a body. The body has its necessities. We do things that take care of the necessities and be satisfied. And be satisfied means it may be this or maybe that. So the warning specifically is people work, Prabhupada would spend a lot of time sometimes describing the life of a materialist. And they don't even, it's like awful. No time for anything other than working very hard. And he would describe people arrive very early in somewhere in India and take the train to go to the city to work, and so much time, and they get to the workplace and they train back to their home, and by the time they're home they're exhausted, and a little something to eat and take rest. And like this story he would tell, a child asked, "Mommy, who's that?" "Oh, that's your dad." Because he would be gone before the child was up and come back after the child had taken rest, and the child didn't even know who daddy was. I guess that means 7 days of the week. So that ugra karma type of attraction is to be dropped in favor of this one. Doing that which we need to do, making some endeavor, but not over-endeavor. And then this other point, that we're destined to receive something, whatever the standard is. And it's not by working harder, it's somehow going to become different. Anyway. And eating, he makes it really easy here. It's just only eat prasad. You can be gluttonous, just make sure it's prasad. That's not what he says. But one can, okay. But only prasad, and for the necessity of the body, and this is the audience that Prabhupada is writing for is the world. Not just the practicing devotee audience. So the world should understand only prasad. And less emphasis on, but mention of maintaining body and soul together. And ideally, in course of time, that's like well under control and modest. And Muni, thoughtful. Think of Krishna. Don't think of those things that cause material anxiety. Think of Krishna. With like the stress management discussion last night. Instead of thinking of, worrying about something, the advice, the worldly professional advice is think of something pleasant. So for the devotee, something pleasant is thinking of Krishna and service to Krishna, and be thoughtful in that way. While the materialist is always thoughtful about improving his material condition, a devotee's thought should always be engaged in improving his condition in Krishna consciousness. That way, Muni. Living in a secluded place. Well, this is Satya Yuga. Certainly, devotees, it's even like our temples, 72 Commonwealth Avenue, is not in a secluded place. So it's not like Prabhupada disapproved that the temple was purchased there, or before that it was in Alston. And starting the Hare Krishna movement at 26 Second Avenue, that's not a secluded place. So we engage our, for the purpose of bringing the message of devotion to people, we accept that austerity, but our hankering, he's encouraging here, to be where there's devotees in Vrindavan. So it's one of the five most potent activities of all the 64, residing in a sacred place. So he's just saying it this way here. We may, for various reasons, be aware it's different than the secluded place description here. When we do that, we're there for a mission, to be a beacon of Krishna consciousness and give Krishna consciousness to others where there's population. And internally hankering for the life of devotion to Krishna in a sacred place. And so one of the missions of the seven purposes of ISKCON is to create places of pilgrimage. Certainly one can make one's home like that, or make communities like that. Let's see what happens. There's this is a little not a philosophical point, just a practical point. There's a group of us, one of the conference calls I have today, there's discussion about a goal that we set during our meetings in Chicago, the North American GBC group, a goal of establishing 5 model training centers in North America. And that the thought initially was Brahmachari Ashram, to train new people that come, train them in Krishna consciousness. And so there's a group of us that are going to be discussing that today, an ongoing working group. And from the first discussion we had, it's difficult to separate exclusively, like here's a Brahmachari Ashram, kind of like a monastery thing, because our brahmacharis are engaged in outreach, and after some time, commonly the brahmacharis wish to become married, and then there's a transitioning, so what about that training? And so it's broadened the scope of our, like, what our group is going to focus on. Then one of the persons involved just yesterday evening sent this long thing about, Varnashram, 50%. This is Tsaviram, because he was with Prabhupada in those final months. And Prabhupada was speaking about it. He spoke to him about it. It's like in his heart that we need to do this. And in part of his message is on this point that is the only option that we have to offer, that, you say you train a brahmachari and then they have to be in these two worlds. Or like, you who are working, and then there's your life of devotion, and then there's the life in the workplace. And it has its unpleasantries and its compromises. Certainly the vast majority of people will be in that situation. Even, during Prabhupada's time, or Bhaktivinoda Thakur's time, or our great Acharya's time, they didn't just have rural projects that people go to and find their livelihood and take care of it, like that. It's just not like that was the mission and the model. But there'll be some discussions going forward on that because Prabhupada wanted it, and shouldn't we do that which Prabhupada wanted? There's lots of things. That's a major something. So that, you know, this standard of simple living that most people aren't prepared to do can at least be there, so that in such a way that the basic necessities of a family living in a community can be met. Model like where most of society, like, you know, 90-something percent, will not be interested in that. They can say, oh, that's nice, but they're not prepared to live like that. But for those who are prepared to live like that, to create such a model. So someone who becomes interested in Krishna consciousness can transition from that simple brahmachari life to a simple grihastha life. Anyway, that's a topic that we're going to be exploring. Wish us luck. It's not going to be easy. We talked about this. It was one of the topics in Chicago during our meetings, that the role of our ashram and ISKCON and the GBC. Did you hear that? No? Two people were requested to speak on that topic. Nityananda from Dallas and Tamahar, I think. Nityananda's position was very interesting. He said, we're not evolved in our realization enough to understand how to do that. But if we continue to advance in Krishna consciousness, we'll have an understanding of how to integrate. He had like a whole chart. This is a very interesting presentation. It's online. It's very challenging. It's something that it's clear that Prabhupada wanted. It's not clear how to do it. We haven't made much progress. There's some radical ideas that some people, you know, hold a stick in their hand and, you know, brandish. But in a practical way, it's not so clear. So that's connecting with this also, this living in a secluded place. He should be satisfied with his natural income, eat only as much as he needs to keep his health, live in a secluded place, and always remain peaceful. Largely, just the comment is, unless people have a more or less middle class standard of living, they're not going to be peaceful. Most people aren't prepared to accept less than that. They won't be peaceful. So, kind of like good luck, because you know the conditioning is such, and having advantages of this and that and the other thing are such that people aren't prepared to accept a more simple standard of living. They want. So let's see where this discussion goes. Do you have a garden?
A garden?
Garden.
No, my garden's not built.
Okay. I'm asking because there was some, just before here I was in Minneapolis, and the family I was staying with, they do have a garden, and they were talking about, you know, all the things on your plate except for the rice and the beans came from the garden. And then, you know, anyway, and then their comment that the devotees they know from Europe, they talk about, you know, the tastelessness of the food that we have because it's not fresh. It's flown in from somewhere and gassed, picked before it's ripe, and so it like looks okay, but it's notional only. That's the language of people that, anyway. There's a flavor in fresh things that are locally grown and in season and all that. It's this, and nourishment and so on. Otherwise, it's like cardboard that looks like an apple or looks like a peach or looks like a tomato or something. It's an interesting subject. It seems that younger generation people at least have the ideal that let's do that. Let's get back, you know, the back to nature idea. Even if like you just have your garden in your backyard instead of buying stuff. It takes time. People have busy lives, they don't have time. Many people in the backyard. Let's see what goes with that. Then friendliness. Very nice instruction. Very similar to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Friendship with devotees, but friendly to everybody. What does that look like? He may say, yes, sir. What you say is all right. But he should not be intimate with them. So that's peers and then innocent people. Just like last night, this young man, Morris, he fits this description. The others, I've got my program, I've got my, I'm going to do it this way. Atmavan, that's the last term. Van means like Bhagavan, one who possesses. Bhaga, or opulence, that's Bhagavan. Atmavan, one who possesses the self. Literally. Self-possessed. So what is it that's my possession? It's myself. Instead of stuff. So situated in the self, that's a devotee should be situated in the self. See oneself, see others with a spiritual conception consistently. That's challenging because, you know, the world doesn't move that way. And we're living in the world. We're not used to that. But it's through cultivation, through spiritual conceptions, regularly hearing, regularly acting on that which we hear. And engaging in devotional service accordingly. It's certainly much easier in the practicing stage in the association of devotees who are more likely to see like that than non-devotees. Of course, a fair amount of our lives, these working people, is in the association of those that don't have a clue like that. So the advice is given for householders who have such occupations, cordial, friendly, respectful, and intimate friendship, deeper friendship is with devotees, and it's just natural. It's not like snobbery or groupism. It's seeking higher consciousness. So we don't look down on other people. But we should not. That's a mistake, but it's discriminating for the purpose of elevation of Krishna consciousness in our character and our quality. So, nice instructions from Kapila Dev. Any discussion?
So first is in Varnashrama, is the discussion about more understanding of how to smoothen the transition from one stage to another? Or...
it's not even defined what the discussion is about. It says Prabhupada said to get there, so we should talk about it. This has been going on for 30 years. And as one goes into the subject, it's clear that it's not clear. Even how you go the first step, what to speak of, what the goal, you know, how do you, what was the goal going to look like? Because that's generally how you begin something. You have a goal, what does the goal look like? And it's not, there's no agreement. So it's pretty hard to go, you know, going your united way towards something you don't agree on. It's major. What's your other question?
I was going to also ask in a different way that is it really necessary to invest in such discussions, because in the current everyone's life is different, and within that different lifestyle, Krishna consciousness can be practically incorporated, and then
yes,
one can move towards the...
A short answer is yes. Then a longer answer is, but Prabhupada envisioned that this is important. And it's important primarily for those who are not devotees, but even for devotees who are weak in their sadhana, as he put it, chanting of their japa and chanting of their gayatris, and therefore weak spiritually, and therefore the necessity of a structure that will support them. On the other hand, their advocates, like Shivram Maharaj is an advocate who is not spiritually weak, but has created a community of devotees where it's part of the thread of how the community functions, because it's natural, it's Krishna's system, because we're not fully enlightened. You know, one doesn't need the safety net if one is enlightened. If one is not enlightened, one needs a safety net. You know, so to what degree do we need the safety net? Like, you know, what did Prabhupada give us? There's some distinctions, certainly, ashram distinctions. And there's some varna distinctions, according to qualities of work. Not so well defined. So he wished to define it. Now, is it just meant to be like museum? You know, something over there, there's a model of what varnashram is supposed to look like, and that people can go and take a bus ride and take pictures of, you know, is it supposed to be like that? Or is this, anyway, so it's not clear. There's so many things not clear about it. But it's something that Prabhupada wanted. He expressed it as his mission. Abhiram repeated in this little message yesterday. What I recall is Prabhupada wanted to go to Gita Nagari, go to the West, specifically Gita Nagari, and stay there and teach the devotees how varnashram. So it was not like for like a preaching tool. It was how he wanted the devotees to live. He didn't do it. And it's a mystery. And that's where this comment of Nityananda, we don't have realizations yet to be able to do it. So we know it's a task to be done. And rather than muddle our way through with very unclear understandings of what the task is and how to accomplish it, focus on elevating our Krishna consciousness. And then the instruction will start to take some shape. That was his. So let's see where this dialogue goes. What's the other thing?
The other question is completely unrelated to this topic.
Okay, that's fine.
So throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, we not only don't find mention of Srimati Radharani, we don't find mention of any names of any gopis, and we don't even find any mention of Goloka Vrindavan as the destination. Like all the places, it's Vaikuntha, going to the association of Lord Vishnu, 400 form. And even like in third canto, when Uddhava, when Krishna kind of gives his blessings to Uddhava, saying that you will go to Vaikuntha. So I was just wondering whether it is just because of the appearance of Lord Chaitanya that we came to know about Goloka Vrindavan and the glories of the intimate pastimes of Krishna.
I don't agree with all of what you said.
Okay.
In part because our great acharyas refer to many, 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 many verses in Srimad Bhagavatam that point to Goloka Vrindavan as the topmost and the type of love, and you know, all the teachings that Lord Chaitanya gave are within the Bhagavatam. It's not like he pulled them out of the air and gave teachings. It's in the Bhagavatam. It wasn't stitched together like he and his followers gave it. It's there. Mm-hmm. Because it presents everything. Mm-hmm. But it's there. And then the illumination of what's there is presented by our acharyas. So it's there. In, for example, in Sri Brahma Samhita, the verse Goloka Namni Nijadami Kale Chatasha Devi Mahesha Haridama Santesha Teshu. That's not something different than what's Bhagavatam message. It's just there, it's explicit. And then verses from the Bhagavatam illuminate that message. I'm spending time seeing, you know, here's the message of Sri Brahma Samhita. Here's how it's supported by or illuminated by passages from the Bhagavatam. Because it's the same message. Not a different message. Just not, it's laid out differently. It's there. Devi Dham, Mahesh Dham, Hari Dham, Goloka Dham. Now, without all the examples, it's there. So many examples. The four-armed Vasudev Krishna being taken to Gokul. And he's the pastimes in Gokul. Then he leaves Vrindavan, goes to Mathura, and exhibits Vasudev. It's all there. The intimacy of Vrindavan, Aishwarya starts to grow, like our acharyas describe from the Bhagavatam, when Krishna comes before Vasudeva and Devaki after killing Kamsa. They see him as the personality of Godhead. He, desiring their parental affection, covers them with yoga maya, so they forget. Anyway, and then in Dwarka, more opulence, less of the intimacy, so that that contrast is greater. And that's all in Goloka, and that's above Ayodhya Dham, and there's intimacy that isn't found in Vaikuntha, but Ayodhya is the topmost amongst the Vaikuntha planets, but not yet in the, not the same. It's there.
Yeah, I was just wondering whether that that synthesis is coming because of how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is...
Well, he extracted the essence, or he exhibited the essence, and then instructed, and then his followers did the work to expand upon the essence. But it's there. It's there. Yes, by his influence, he illuminated, and then his followers expanded, but it's there. And that is to say, without that kind of love that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had and gave, others won't see it. They won't see it. Even though it's there. So we're not, you know, condescending snobs thinking we see something you don't see. It's we feel ourselves fortunate, and we used to share that with others. And depending upon their receptivity or willingness to receive, they can receive. And we don't right away go to that. We go to, you know, Sankhya philosophy. And from that detachment, and from that in sequence.
So this is talking about coming to the natural position and leading a simple life. A bigger part of hesitation for, you know, a lot of people who come in touch with Krishna consciousness is like the step is like huge, and they, you know, the step, like we do get the urgency of this message from Sri Prabhupada's purpose, but we somehow it's difficult for them to understand that it can be gradual. So, because Srila Prabhupada is like very strong, you know, when someone reads the book, so how we can, you know, help someone when they feel that this, you know, they have this huge hesitation and it's obvious, you know, that people who, it's difficult for them to take a step. Like one can artificially come.
Maybe their coach, in short. And what I mean by that is, they have their apprehension, and you hold their hand and say, this is describing the goal. Mm-hmm. It's like this whole retreat that we had in Giranagri on acceptance and progress. Mm-hmm. Knowing what the goal is not intimidating. It's enlightening. And I'm here. Let me accept. And then, from the position I'm in, let me accept those regulations that are suitable for the position I'm in. Then the purpose behind those is so I can progress. And then one should aspire not just to stay in the position I'm in, but to progress. Not artificially, incrementally, sustainably, for progress. There's a very nice, one of Jai Jagannath's favorite sections that on this topic. In fact, he was the one that selected the topic. Because when we deal with others who are, you know, different positions, that's a question. So how do I deal with this when I'm, it's a question. So the, in Bhakti Loka, Sangatyagat, that section, he makes, Bhakti Vinod Thakur writes, there's these several messages. One is, the acceptance part, and as I said, for a particular position, there's some suitable, you know, yamas and niyamas, the do's and the don'ts. You know, they're appropriate for me in this position. So I need to know my position, I need to know what those regulations are that I should accept. And then adhere to them, knowing that they will help me progress. But one shouldn't be complacent, one should be aspiring to progress. It's like the yoga ladder. One who stays in a particular position is identified by that position. But those things may be taken up by one who is on the path to perfection, topmost yoga. So I may be able to do a 12th chapter Bhagavad Gita. I may just be able to do this. But see this in light of this. Not like, oh, I'm only down here. That's not advisable. This is my position. And we encourage people according to their position. Krishna does, we should. And encourage them also from this position. What's the purpose behind it? It's elevation to that goal. So aspire for that. Not artificial.
It's so easy to come to that position artificially, but to take the gradual step.
Well, sometimes, I can speak personally, sometimes making a bold step is very helpful. It actually is sustainable. Not artificially, but if it's sustainable, then that's good. And association makes a big difference. And the person who's guiding or giving association needs to be, you know, wise. We're not always wise. We make mistakes. We're fallible beings. But through a phrase that Rabindra was using during this recent retreat, experience. Guide through experience. So experience means we learn in part by making mistakes. We learn in part by doing things right. Anyway, it's the mood of service practiced over time that gives us experience and, you know, purification. So we can see more subtle things and convey appropriately. Until then, we're not so subtle. We don't have experience. But the principle that's encouraging and supporting. Accept and progress in suitable ways.
On the other hand, there are few set of people who like to jump, you know, immediately to the next level and next level. So, at least what I have experienced so far, so I feel like hesitation myself when I see or when I have to support such, because I'm concerned if they are.
Here's what I do. You know, caution. You want to do that? I mean, just make sure, you know, A and B. If you can't sustain it, don't beat yourself up because you couldn't sustain it. You know, feel discouraged and boo, 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 boo. So, you know, caution. Don't feel discouraged if that happens. And then maybe, you know, at least consider, besides this big jump, is something incremental, a safer and gentler and more sustainable way to go. But you want to do the big jump, I'll support that. And then back to the end. But if it doesn't work, don't go into that lamentation thing. Or call yourself a bad name, or call the process a bad name, because you did something, you know, prematurely. What do you want to do? I've been through that hundreds of times. So the commitment that you're making to the person is the relationship with the person.
It's so important that our personal experience need not be, I mean, someone else's and me. Because I may lean towards the gradual.
Yeah.
But the challenge is, if, you know, because there is this tendency to, you know, also speak things from my realization and experience, but it may not match with someone else's.
Yeah, I was going to say that, but you said it, so thank you. Our autobiography may not match somebody else's.
Mm-hmm.
Their capacity and their need, and, you know, like, you know, who knows, from their past life, maybe they were, like, way up there. And now they're connecting with devotional service, and there they go. And it's perfectly natural. It works for them. Still, because, I mean, my experience says, even that may be so, they still going to be some strong spiritual support, because there's been this entanglement in the lower nature kind of space, and that's, you know, shocking to the system. So they'll need support. But then you got the safety net in case, you know, there's a crash. That is usually what I said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
If that happens, here's what you should do. Please make sure you don't make the mistake of beating yourself up or faulting the process or faulting someone else or, you know, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
This big quantum jump is, let's see. And I wouldn't recommend it, but maybe it suits you, and therefore I'm there. It's a relationship, commitment to the relationship. Anything, either of you?
On the question of over endeavor or determining when a difficulty is great, what kind of inquiry is helpful to making those determinations?
Nice question. Usually the question is, where do you draw the line? But that's not what you ask. Here's a few. One is, am I thinking of myself as the doer? The one causing the result, because that may in fact be the obstacle. Not that Krishna doesn't want it, but Krishna wants him to get out of the way. You know, the ego dimension reduced. So that's one inquiry. Another is, is there another way or even another direction altogether that Krishna wants to be rather than this one? And that's very subjective. How are you going to verify the answer to that one? But if you ask the question, you may get an answer. If you don't ask the question, even if, you know, the answer is shouted at you, you probably won't hear it. So just inquiry is, am I going about this the right way, in a way that would be suitable for the situation and pleasing to Krishna? Or, in fact, is there something else altogether that's wanted of me by Krishna at this time? You know, you're flexible and wishing to respond to the signal from Krishna to you. And then it's kind of an inquiry, maybe it's more like a something besides an inquiry, like modification of intent, modification being patience. It seems to me, I did all those checks, so it seems to me that it is something worthy, it is something important, and maybe the timing is just not right for some reason that I'm not aware of. So let me be patient. So that's, I guess it's the inquiry is this it a timing issue? Or is it I should step back altogether from this effort? So if it's a timing issue, then while I'm being patient, what should I do to prepare the ground for when the time is right? And it's kind of connected to the prior one. Am I going about this in the right way?
Maharaj, I was thinking about when you said living simple. If you see this world, especially in America, the role of a woman, just sitting at home doing nothing, it's being looked upon as wasting time, and hence they go out and work, and it's very much welcome, encouraged. And when it comes to devotional life, such a Mataji, enters devotional life, and then there is this change of the scripture says there are different roles for a lady than just going out and working. So the first question is, when the scriptures define the livelihood, is it related to the man working always, or there are circumstances which justify the lady also working, and what are the parameters which makes it suitable for her?
There's the question. It's nature. If someone like this question of Krishna Priya, supposing there's someone that like yourself, a young Indian woman who encouraged to use your skills and grow and all the modern stuff. And so now you have the skills. Now what are you supposed to do with those skills? And then so it's so much dependent on all of the other stuff surrounding that question, like pressure and expectations of others and society and, it's the nature of the individual as to what is suitable for that individual according to suitability. Now, there's flexibility, provided principle isn't violated. But then, the further one goes from the Vedic, this is me, the further one goes from the Vedic model, the more one finds oneself dealing with complexities. Unnecessary complexities. And then, struggling with those complexities and losing, because of that, losing sight of the higher purpose of life. Self-realization, God-realization. But that may be necessary for somebody, because without complexity, they go stir crazy. They need it. They're addicted to complexity. So how to live where I'm energized. Some persons need, there certainly may be a way to provide challenging, meeting challenges of life that doesn't have all that complexity. So it's all individual. The evaluation of what's appropriate, what's not appropriate in modern context, as far as I have observed, it's so individual based. And even with an individual, it may change over time.
So the Vedic model is that the men, there were men who were working and providing for the family.
Well, yes and no. Supposing someone is in a Vaishya family, are the women not supposed to go in the field and help thrash the grain and all that? Mm-hmm. They do that. But they're with their children. And that's kind of, so it's... Modern model is not exactly how you compare.
So so when is it unhealthy for like sometimes I see a role reversal happening in the family, like
it's very individual. So I'm uncomfortable making general statements about something that's so individual. If you have a specific case in mind, we can talk about a specific case, and then evaluate a specific case. But general rules of, I don't have a problem with, you know, is this Krishna in the center? Are the husband and wife working in tandem with Krishna in the center? I know of examples where the woman is working and the man is not. Or, you know, some combination, like Anutima and Rukmini. He's doing tons of service for ISKCON. And one month of the year, he has certain functions in relation to the business that she's conducting, jewelry business. She does it, you know, anyway. She's the main breadwinner. And it's okay. She's happy to see her husband doing all this. And he does his part. He does the contracts. He does he does a certain part. And then the month of December, that's all he does. Is Christmas stuff. So that's an example. But, you know, rather than like a whole long list of examples, it depends. What's healthy is where Krishna's at the center and both husband and wife are feeling very satisfied. And then that situation can change and can change and can change over time, too.
Personally talking, the examples I have in mind.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki? Yeah, okay.